Lucille Puckett is here with me. I'm BJ Murphy. Lucille Puckett is running for mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina. And if you've seen the woman with the red hair, everybody wants to know what's up with that. Why do you have your signature red hair?
Because one, it's being my favorite color, for one. But then two, you know, it's like the blood of Jesus, you know. And some tell me, you know, that there's fire. Fire is red, and there's fire up under this red hair. So there's many reasons for the red hair. But one, you know, I really just didn't want to change who I have been. I just didn't really want to change who I have been because I want to be my authentic self while I'm running for mayor. I have so many people telling me, maybe you should dye your hair back black or some other neutral color. And after you win the race, then boom, you can pop back out with your red. But to me, that's fake and that's phony. And I want to be real and I want to be sincere because it's not about my hair color. Because you got some that's blonde.
Yeah.
You got some that's gray. You got some that's bleached.
Yeah.
You know, even being black is not always their natural color.
Right, right.
So I just want to be who I am again. And right now, I mean, red is who I have been for quite a few years now. So I just decided just to be who I am.
Come on now. I love that. That's why people love Lucille Puckett. She's real. And she's going to give it to you raw. You running for mayor, how many times have you ran? What?
That is a famous question by so many.
Yes.
But this is my fourth time running.
Okay.
But I also tell people, Abraham Lincoln ran 11 times before he was elected president. So I have 7 more times to go. But I'm hoping my fourth time, I will come out a winner this time.
Every time that you run, you get stronger and stronger. Your name reverberates in the community. I think the passion that you have for the community is undeniable. Tell us the reason why you're running and you keep running to represent the people.
And you just said it, a mouthful, to represent the people. Because I think the people don't have a voice. Because even while I'm running and not running, people started coming to me, asking me for assistance, for help. And sometimes I hit a brick wall or a dead end when I go to try to find those resources for those people. So again, sometimes they say it's not about what you know, it's who you know. If you can't be a part of the solution on the outside, you know, they always say if you can't beat them, join them. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can get more results for my people, you know, being a part of the so-called Charlotte Circle. I keep running also for consistency.
Mm-hmm.
My first run was in 13. I ran on youth. I ran for affordable housing and even the crime rate, you know, community safety. And those issues have not changed.
Yes.
Actually, in fact, they're getting worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look at the homicide rate. It's increasing. You know, anybody can play with data and say, oh, our homicides was down, you know, last year. But if you include all the shootings and the justified homicides, they're actually, in fact, up. But already this year, we have hit the ground running as far as the homicides. And even with our youth violence, it has definitely increased. We see our victims are getting younger. And also our perpetrators are even getting younger. We need to really bring them to the table to address what do you actually need. Because if you want an orange and you're getting an apple, you're not satisfied. So we need to talk to our young people to see, what do you all need? Why do you all think that this youth violence is happening in our city? I see a lot of conversations going on, and I don't see the people that is directly impacted and affected by this at the table.
You have the heart for the people because you always are there on the scene. When something happens in this city, Lucille Puckett is present. Lucille Puckett is in the hood. Lucille Puckett is in the boardroom. Lucille Puckett is on the street. Lucille Puckett, they come to you, the media, to get your take on what's happening in the city. As far as any candidate that's running against you, including Mayor Vi Lyles, there's nobody that has the reputation for being among the citizens of Charlotte but Lucille Puckett. Anybody that's running against you, they can't hold a candle to you on that. So how do you get the general public to understand what your passion is? Because let's begin from, you know, when you lost your son.
Absolutely.
Talk about that and your activism going forward.
Well, my activist, as you know, I ran for mayor again, I say, in 2013. So this is just not, you know, a jump in because a situation happened, you know, to me, or, you know, I feel good moment. You know, yes, I lost my son in 2016, but I was in the streets prior to 2016. But once I lost my son in 2016, I saw a lot of things that services and, you know, things that I didn't have, even with my family around me. I had those loved ones. I had the love and I had the support, but there was still something missing. CMPD had this homicide support group, and I went 2 weeks after my son was murdered. And it was something, I was in a room with a whole bunch of moms, family members that had lost their loved ones, looking for that support and that help. And I went back month after month after month after month, and I left more heavy than when I went in. And I saw the heartbreak and the tears of these families. And I say, we got to get these families outside of this one room.
Yeah.
Because when they sit in this room and then they don't come back for another month, they need that connection. They need something more than what's here.
Right.
So started reaching out to some of those moms. And then at the homicide scene of my son, CMPD was so disconnected from what was really going on out there, how they didn't communicate with the family and the loved ones, how guns were still drawn, how that line was still a divider. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, they really need someone there that really understands what they're going through. So from that point, I started going to the homicide scenes to be that someone, taking, you know, water. Because, you know, people, when the homicides happen, they tend to just run out. Yeah. Whether they have on shirt, shoes, they could be a diabetic, whatever the case may be, they still have needs. And again, I wanted to be that someone. Someone there at the scene to provide what is needed. Also, along the process, you know, it's not like it's a natural cause sickness that is expected. This is so unexpected.
Yeah.
A lot of these families don't have life insurance. Mm. They don't know the process to get in contact with the coroner, the funeral home, the next steps. So for me to have been through the process, now that I can be that light to kind of shine some direction on what's their next step.
Yeah.
I'm there where they need me. And then even after that, and I know this a long answer, but even after that, the court process.
Yeah.
Here it is, 6 years for me, and I still haven't been to trial for my son yet.
Wow, wow, wow.
That could be very challenging and very difficult for family members not understanding.
Yeah.
And our court system are not very, they don't give you the information. You know, the police department, throughout the investigation, they don't reach out to the families, or if the families reach out to them, they very closed mouth. Just to let a family member know that we are still working on your case. Just because you don't hear from us don't mean that we're not. That makes a difference when you're connecting to these families. So to be able to talk to these families and give them my experience really, really helps out a lot.
What's the most pressing issue in Charlotte?
When it comes to the violence and this homicide, we have to be able to, again, to connect to our young people. Homicides do not just happen. It's not just in a silo. You know, when you talk about economic mobility, can't find jobs. If you got in trouble as a juvenile, you know, that record follow you the rest of your life. So can't find a job, can't provide for your family, homelessness, no food. All of that contributes to these homicides. Hopelessness. If you don't have hope for your own life and for your own future, why do you think people really care about someone else's, you know, life or their future?
Yeah.
So it's not really a one size fit all, like what's more impressive than others. We have to be able to work on all of our issues in conjunction to everything that's going on in Charlotte.
Black Charlotte is in trouble because in a couple of years, where are we going to be living at? Because affordable housing haven't even scratched the surface of affordable housing. What are your thoughts on affordable
housing?
That
affordable housing word just rubs me the wrong way, to be honest. Because when you talk about affordable, it's it's affordable to whom? You know, somebody may be able to afford a $3,000 a month mortgage or rent. Some may be able to afford $1,000. Some may be able, to afford $500. Mm-hmm. So that word affordable housing, that's just a buzzword.
Yeah.
I'm saying we need to be looking at low income, you know, housing. When I drive down the street and I see my brothers and my sisters walking around with a backpack or a black bag or a buggy or no shoes or, you know, it's freezing outside and they don't have no clothes, no coat. We have to be able to, as Black Charlotte, to do something for, you know, our people.
Yeah.
They keep using again the word affordable housing. We need to really dig down deep into the foundation, you know, of that and address that for all.
All this Black leadership that we have in the city of Charlotte and Black people at the bottom of the barrel. Why is that?
Because they say skin folk don't make you kinfolk. And just because they look like you, don't mean that they really understand the issues that is at hand. Because now it's as if, you know, you're Black and when you're running for office, you want to always start out by saying, oh, when I was growing up, I lived in affordable housing or my parents was this way and that way. Oftentimes you really forget where you really come from until you start running for office or you continue to campaign for office. Not only did I not live in public housing or grow up poor, but eventually somewhere along my trail, I wind up being in public housing. And they say never, because I always used to say that I would never live in a public housing development.
Yeah.
But I found that to not be true because God have a way of putting you somewhere to teach you lessons.
Yeah.
So when I did have to move into public housing, I saw real what my people was going through. And this not from a child's perspective, but this from an adult perspective. And I think our current elected officials and our current leaders lose that perspective along the way of being dealing with this in a childhood when it really wasn't your fight. This was your parents' fight. But when you have to fight this fight yourself as an adult,
mm-hmm.
how worried about how you're going to feed your family, worried about how you're going to pay that light bill, gas bill, water bill. Even in public housing, there is still, you're still fighting a fight that people is unfamiliar with, because then you're stereotyped or you're said to only want a handout. When there's so many there that just want a hand up.
Yeah.
You know, when I was there in public housing, I was a housing authority. I was a commissioner, a resident president. I brought GED programs to my development, Delahaye Courts. I brought CNA classes to Delahaye Courts. So many of those residents took that opportunity, got the GED, got their CNA, and was able to really move forward. So we have to really look at what we're offering them and study offering people what you think they want, give them what they need, and that way they can really become more self-sufficient. And I just think our elected officials is really not connected at this time, because they go through their staff instead of getting out in the public and interacting with their constituents to see what they really need.
The tale of two cities where you got one that's white and wealthy and then one that is poor and Black. And you talk about the upward mobility study, which everybody keeps quoting. What are people doing about it? Because it's getting worse.
You have to really follow the money. You have to follow the money trail because I'm like Shirley Chisholm, unbought. Mm-hmm. And unbossed.
Right.
And that's not really what they want here in Charlotte.
Right.
Because I think when they get a leader in place like that, then you will see change truly start to happen. I know they say that the mayor don't have a vote, but the mayor have influence.
Right.
There is power in her position.
Yes.
You don't have to get in there and be dictative. Mm-hmm. But if you know how to be transparent, if you know how to communicate with your constituents and with your co-workers or however they want to label themselves, everybody else on the dais, I think change can, you know, truly come.
Yeah.
And if we talk about real life situations, you know, I can say I'm human. And when I lost my son, I'm more connected with this homicide rate. Mm-hmm. You know, I have grandchildren that finding themselves in situations that our so-called high-class leaders who live in Valentine, they don't see, and they just want to say, well, the child should have walked away. Well, the child should have done this. But unless you actually living and walking in these particular children's shoes, it just is not that simple. And a lot of time, these buzzwords right now during COVID, these buzzwords is even more important here in Charlotte. And I say that because money is flying from everywhere when you talk about diversity, racism, and all this, especially with what happened to George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. Eyes is open. And you have those people in the other side of Charlotte, when you say the Tales of Two Cities, who now want to know, how can I help? What can I do? As African Americans, I see we are really losing ground at this very critical time, because instead of coming together and using this as an opportunity to truly make change, we worried about what color my hair is while I'm running for mayor.
Wow.
Why are you worried about what color my hair is when coming together and fighting against homicides, fighting against youth violence, fighting against true equity here in the city of Charlotte? We have more things to be coming together about right now than do I speak the Queen's English, or do I fit this aesthetic or this aesthetic? Let's come together and put all of our resources together and all of the resources that's coming to us at this time, because in another year or two from now, we're going to have lost a very, very, very great opportunity to truly make change.
Let's talk about your economic plan. What is your vision for Charlotte as far as economic mobility, upward mobility? That's which is another buzzword,
right?
To really help the little man on the street, the brother that's on Beatty's Ford and LaSalle, walking into the Family Dollar, you know, what I'm saying, he going to buy some diapers and going back to the house trying to help his young family. How is he gonna benefit from all that Charlotte is doing, and how can he be a part of the $250 or so million that they dropped on the corridor on Beatty's Ford Road?
Well, I know. I remember when I was a housing authority commissioner, and any dollars that was coming from like HUD, you have to look within that community that you're planning on building and putting, you know, anything into, and start there when you start talking about employment. Yeah, we're bringing all these big companies here to Charlotte, but is our people truly qualified for those jobs? We also have to quit allowing the company that's moving into Charlotte bringing their people here to fulfill the positions of jobs that you're bringing to Charlotte. Because by the time they get here, all the positions are practically already filled. Mm-hmm. And you might have 10, 20 or so jobs available for the people here in Charlotte. And then they're not trained for those positions. We have to go into our middle schools and our high schools and stop teaching just to the test, because everybody cannot learn, you know, to the test. We need to bring back our technology, our technical things in our school, far as carpentry and home ec and, you know, auto mechanics and things like that. And if you know a company is coming here to Charlotte, make sure your people is trained and qualified, not only in the high schools. If you know a job, a company is coming here to Charlotte, have a training program that you can send them to CPCC or places like Beatty's Ford Road Vocational Training over on the Beatty's Ford Road corridor. We have to do a better job at preparing our people for these positions.
What subject matter are you an expert at that people should put their trust in Lucille Puckett being the mayor? What's the one thing that you know that you know that you know?
When you're talking about me and what really sets me aside from, I say, all of the other city council or, you know, our current mayor, and relatable, able to approachable.
Yeah.
Not afraid to get out and walk the streets of Charlotte too. And I don't have no perspective place or side of the city that I'm afraid to go on. Where the people need me, I'm there. On Betty's Ford Road, any time of day, any time of night, I can walk those streets. So transparency. And I think that's a big part of a problem with not just me, but with Charlotte.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Charlotte have this blanket that they want to seem like they have everything together and they perfect. It's okay to admit that we are not.
Come on.
And we're working toward that. And that's where, you know, I just really think that I can really shed a different light when it comes to our current city council.
Yeah.
Because I remember, and I'm going to give you this one example. When I was on a housing authority board, the city council and the housing authority alike, just before your meetings, they give you this big book with maybe about 5,000 pages with all the issues and things in it.
Right.
You can guarantee what they say about black people when you want to hide something from a black person, put it in the book, it's not being read.
Right.
But when I go to those meetings, I'm prepared.
Yeah.
Not only do I know what's in that book, but I have talked to or lived or know about real circumstances and situations. I don't have to go out and find someone that's going to tell a story like I want it told to get the results that I want to get on the dais. I will be able to really bring people to the table that really need these changes, want this change, and will actually help fight for these changes. Yeah. I would be able to, I really feel like I would be able to bring those connecting pieces to our city council, because right now people are going on assumption about Lucille. They're looking, you know, at Lucille instead of actually having a conversation with Lucille. Because when you have a conversation with Lucille, that's a aha moment. Like, I didn't know she had it in her. You know, people look at me because I don't dress that part. I'm comfortable in my sweatpants or my blue jeans and my hoodies.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable in that.
Right.
But I can, I you know, clean up.
That's right.
When I need be, you know, or whatever, too. Yeah. So you can't judge a book by its cover.
That's right.
You know, I have an associate's degree in human services. Love people. I have a bachelor's degree in social work.
Yeah.
Again, want to get to the micro and macro answers, solutions to our problems. And again, I love people.
Yes.
But I also have a master's degree in business administration. You know, I have fought so many cases for people in law. So one of the judges there has cited me. She say, if I hear about your name one more time in court, I'm going to cite you for practicing law without a license. You know, I found that funny because I feel like, you know, there's no door that a judge or anybody can shut for me that God has opened for me.
Come on.
And I feel like I'm a lot like Harriet Tubman. You know, some, I'm going to send some before me. You know, some going to come after me. Some going to go with me. But as long as I'm doing what I need to be doing here, that I know that my people is going to be getting the benefit. So when my day end here on this earth, I would be able to hear, well done, my good and faithful servant, because I know that I followed the calling and the leading of my father.
So if you became the mayor, would you be able to be our fearless leader and attack anything that you heard your city council people say that you're in opposition with when it comes to the sales tax, when it comes to gentrification, when it comes to dealing with these developers, when they come and you know your people are going to be marginalized? And when I say your people, I'm talking specifically about black people. And what is wrong with us that we see that black people in Charlotte are at the bottom of the barrel, scraping the rust of the bottom of the barrel? Why can't we say that we want to help black people and be proud of that? And anybody that got a problem with it, let's deal with it out in the open with transparency. What is the problem with us as black leaders saying that? Why are we afraid to be ourselves like that?
I could just truly say because they worried about the next election. They sit on that dais every day, every Monday, walk these streets every day worried about will they be reelected in the next election. And not just for the people. They sitting there about the benefits that they are personally receiving being an elected official.
Like, talk about example.
You know, they say position and power go to some people's head. Mm-hmm. So when you walk in the street and people will be like, oh, that's our... Well, they can't say that's our mayor because, unfortunately, a lot of people don't even know at this point who our mayor is. It's like, oh, I thought maybe you was already the mayor so much as we see you.
Right.
But, you know, being able to go to games or travel or just... things like that, or connecting to what they call their next level. Because most of our politicians that I see today, they're not really even focusing on the position that they're in. They're looking for their next elevation.
Right. So this developer has a job, or this person has this, or this business person. So I'm looking for connections to help me advance my, you know, financial standing.
And not only that, I mean, just look at, take Julie Isis, for example, you know, being Mayor Pro Tem. So one moment you fall off, you say, okay, I'm ready to spend time with my family. I think I'm just going to, you know, move from this. And then 2 weeks or 2 months or so down the road, you hear, oh, I'm running for Congress. So that's what I mean by, you know, waiting on their next position. You know, I've seen some of our politicians leave from, you know, the city council, county commission, et cetera, and they go to the White House, you know. So looking for those connections for that elevation. Can you say that that's necessarily wrong? Because everybody has to feed their family and take ambition. Care of themselves. Yeah. But while you are in the position that you are currently in, do what's in the best interest of the people that you was elected to serve.
Right. Yeah, because there's nothing wrong with having ambition. But it should be like, man, when you do want to go to the next level, we should be like, please don't go. You have done so much
right.
to help us.
Right.
What can we do to make you stay here? That's what it should
right.
be
but
like.
But now you're seeing people say bye, yeah. you know, what they done for us, you know, or whatever anyway. So it's this right here, you know, running for mayor, sometimes I even ask myself, you know, why do you keep running? You know, even though you say, you know, the Abraham Lincoln thing, and I know that my people, you know, need me. But more importantly, I need my people. Because if I'm willing to make that sacrifice to be your voice, when I look back or to the left or to the right of me, I should feel that I have that support. Mm-hmm. You know, don't give me your problem that you're not willing to fight yourself. I'm willing to stand out and stand up for you, but I need to know that when my head is on that chopping block, when I'm ready to be hung on that noose for advocating and fighting for you, I need to know that you're willing at the same time to fight for me. Will I get it all right? You know, in the beginning, you know, will I make all of the right choices? Maybe not, because we all know that there's not a one size again solution or, you know, to all the problems. I will be willing to speak what I feel is not in the best interest of for my people. But will they have to be compromised? Will I win them all? No, I won't. But will I be willing to speak? Yes, I will.
The wealth of Charlotte, people that live on the other side of the wedge that they created where the wealthy whites live on this side of the freeway. If they're listening to you right now, they're saying, well, why should I vote for Miss Lucille Puck? It sounds like she doesn't have any empathy for us. So can she be equitable in dealing with both sides of the poor and the wealthy in Charlotte?
Oh, no doubt. Because my problems or the problems on one side of the bridge impact the problems on the other side of the bridge. Because I'm here to tell you, homicides ain't staying on one side of the bridge. They're slowly creeping over and going over the underpath, under the underpath, they're going to the other side. So if you don't want to see what we see on one side of the bridge, I would say on my side of the bridge, because I live on the other side of the bridge, then you would join forces with me right now to make sure that those problems won't escalate over to your side of the bridge. And I really feel like the voices on the other side of the bridge is being heard loud enough on the city council that my voice, along with their voice, will make a difference and better for them. But they do a good job of advocating for themselves. And because of the wealth and the name recognition and other things that they have in this city, they get attention, I would say, that is necessary and already needed. The people on the other side, I may have to do a little bit more advocating for them because they feel like their voice is silent because what they don't have, they don't have the name recognition, they don't have the connection. But I would be a mayor for all people, all people. Yes, I am black. Yes, the issues of the black will resonate more with me because I am black. But all issues in the city of Charlotte matters. We need to do more in decreasing that wedge because of how things look now. Our elected officials contribute to that divide. Because when they go to saying, we'll put sidewalks on this side of town because a city council person, you know, wife and child, you know, was hit while standing at the bus stop. But you think of how many children on the other side don't have a sidewalk to walk to school, to walk to a playground, to walk to a store. They also get hit or they just stuck in their neighborhoods and community, which what contributes again to our crime levels.
Yeah.
Because when you can't get out and do things and you feel like you're trapped in a barrel, what do? You fight your way out. And we wind up fighting against each other.
Yeah.
So if we can make those playing fields equal where sidewalks are being built, greenways are being built, equitable schools are being built, the same things is being built on all sides of town, then we will alleviate a lot of the problems. But again, I won't be just one voice for one side of town. I will be a voice for all.
But nobody can deny that blacks in Charlotte, we need a friend.
Absolutely.
We need an advocate. We need somebody that's bold and fearless to speak for us, because as we pass off the scene, as Charlotte is being built up, you know, one of the other candidates that I was talking to, I asked him, what do you think Charlotte's going to look like in the next 10 years? He said, San Francisco. And you know what kind of shape San Francisco, it's the haves and the haves nots. And that's what Charlotte is becoming.
It is, yeah. Very much so. But I'm going to tell you, when you talk about my Caucasian brothers and sisters, I have found since I had started my own nonprofit, Take Back Our Hoods, and Hood stands for Helping Our Own Damn Selves, I found that they want to be a part of the solution, but they don't know how to ask, can they help, or ask what they can do, because, again, there seems to be such a divide among us. You know, we're still living in somewhat of a slave mentality where it is to divide and conquer. And they think by keeping us divided, they are conquering what the city of Charlotte needs. But I really think becoming the mayor of Charlotte, where I can include, totally include, when they talk about that buzzword inclusiveness, to totally include both sides of our city, to have them interacting with each other. Because anytime you have a meeting that's supposed to be for the benefit of the city, and you having this meeting on the west side, this meeting in Ballantyne, that's perfectly designed to keep people separated. So when you find a middle ground to have these meetings where people can come together and really get to know each other and hear about each other's issues, change can truly take place again at that moment, at that time.
The real human hurt and frailty of Black people is not being translated right.
I really do believe that there is a lot of white allies. Because when you go and you look at the voting history, all whites are not Republican.
Mm-hmm.
All Blacks is not Democrats. So when we look at who's voting for us, we have those white votes help us win elections. So obviously they want to see that change. They want to see that togetherness. So it's high time that we take those votes, those stats, and make them work for the betterment of all people.
Because, Lucille, this is a very critical election. I mean, all elections are critical, but the energy of Charlotte right now, if nobody does anything to improve the condition of Black life in this city, all hell is going to break loose in the next 3 years. You're not going to be able to go to the grocery store.
Absolutely.
In peace.
Absolutely.
Because the crime right now, this city is spinning out of control. And somebody's got to do something about it. And I believe that your voice is the voice that we need. We don't need all that corporate mumbo jumbo talk no more.
Right.
We need somebody that's real to say, look here. This is what's getting ready to go down if we don't change this city.
Exactly. And you know, I even now in having conversations like that with, well, I can't say current elected officials because they won't really bring me to the table to discuss anything, you know, trying to show them and tell them. And then they got some of our leaders in the Black community so blindsided. If they offer them a few dollars, you know, unfortunately, you know, they take those few dollars and sell out the rest of, you know, their community, the rest of their Black families for, you know, a few dollars. And we really have to get away from that, because where you see, even on Betty's Ford Road, you see this Chase Bank, you see all these promises of beautifying the Betty's Ford Road. But at the end of the day, that's gentrification at its finest. Mm. Where is my Black people are going? Mm. There is no protection in place for those families, those Black families over there in that community. They're going to be sold out at a high cost from their community leaders and their elected officials in that area. It's high time we call in those heavy hitters, as you would say, such as myself, to really show our people, yes, we want change. Yes, we want better things in our area, but we don't have to do that at a cost for our people in not just 3 years, immediately. Mm-hmm. These are some immediate things that they're doing that is affecting our people. And we have to start being proactive, study reactive, because by the time it's done, it's too late.
Yes.
We can't go back and change it. Yeah. Where they did that in one vote, it will take years for us, if ever, to change that. Yeah. Look at what happened to Brooklyn Village, I should say. We have been fighting for that how long?
A long time.
And do you really see that true change? They keep giving us, as Black people, pacifiers, and we sucking on it. We putting holes in them pacifiers. Thinking it's satisfying us.
Yeah.
But for generations to come and generations to come, the results are still a negative for our people.
Yeah.
So the same way I see it in my community right now, it is predominantly Black in my area. But every single day I wake up, I see a new developer, a new realtor coming into our area, soon to be taken over. No more Blacks. Yeah. We are being eliminated. We're being priced out.
Yeah,
priced out in Charlotte.
That's right. And even people with a high education, I was listening to a WFAE, and they had that forum, that diversity and inclusion. And this lady said, I'm a Harvard graduate. This Black lady saying, I'm a Harvard graduate, and I find it hard for myself, for me and my husband, to find affordable housing in Charlotte, because the average house now is starting at, what, $400,000.
These programs to help people, yeah, first-time buyers and things, they want to put you in these rough areas where most families like, and I want to say the Betty's Ford Road corridor, we want to take our people that want to move out of Betty's Ford Road corridor to be able to buy a home anywhere in the city of Charlotte that they want to. But they're making it so unaffordable, even to people like you was just saying, doctors, you know, lawyers. Mm-hmm. They're making it unaffordable to all, you know, so they're moving to the outskirts. They're trying to move us out.
Yeah, out of Charlotte. Yeah,
out of Charlotte.
Yeah, blacks. Yeah,
they're slowly moving us blacks.
Yeah,
out of Charlotte.
That's right.
And when they talk about helping the homeless population, they are really creating a new homelessness because people can't afford it.
We're getting to know Lucille Puckett today, y'all. She's running for mayor of Charlotte, and we hope through this conversation you've gotten a chance to examine her mind, her thoughts, the way she thinks about what's going on.
The issues have not changed. They only are getting worse. So if you're not part of the solution, then you're part of the problem. We have recycled politicians who's moving from this position to that position. We have politicians who have went away for a year or two or three and now want to come back and be in the race. We need to have new eyesight, new vision, on our city council, on our county commission, even the sheriff, even the chief of police. If you do not feel that they have your best interest at heart, your vote is all that you have. Do not be afraid to express your voice through your vote. Because if you don't get out and vote, you are voting for just what you do not want. A vote for no one is a vote for someone. So get out and vote, because we do need to address our low income, affordable housing, our community safety, our policing, our youth violence. There are so many issues in the city of Charlotte that need to be addressed to make that beautiful Charlotte that we all want to live, work, and play in.
Lucille Puckett, y'all, running for mayor of Charlotte. Of course, the election is coming up. And
what
do we need to get ready for as far as early voting and the general election?
Early voting starts April 28th. Through May 14th, and a general election is May the 17th. But even before early voting start, we have work to do, y'all. If you all support me, Lucille Puckett, y'all want to see change, because together, change is now. I need help. I need door knockers, phone callers. More importantly, I need donations. We cannot win a campaign without money, unfortunately. You know, people have $86,000 just waiting to pay people to put billboards up, radio ads up. I just thank my brother here today for this opportunity, because without him and this opportunity, my voice would probably never have been heard over the airwaves. Other than, you know, you see me on the news, you know, speaking against the violence and things in this city, but just information that need to be heard today. So again, if you really want to make change, please help with this campaign. Every little bit matters.
Okay. So tell them how they can donate to you.
Just go out on my Facebook page, Lucille Puckett. Look me up. The one with, of course, the red hair. I have a page, Lucille Puckett for Mayor. There will be a way that you can contribute and donate there. So it's Lucille Puckett for Mayor at gmail.com. You can email me there, and we can find out how you can donate, or you can send any donation to P.O. Box 790882, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28206.